You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
This is where the car horns come from.
Uh-huh. Okay, ready?
Yes, I'm ready. My name is Jason Black.
Hi, my name is Nick Westray.
I'm Jason Black.
And this is For the Girls podcast.
Like, subscribe, and download.
This is a podcast about queer people and their love of divas.
Yeah, this is a stan podcast for your bosom buddies.
This is a podcast all about Lady Marines and Broadway legends.
This is a podcast for friends. Thank you for being ours.
This is a podcast for ladies in the moon.
Who do we have, Nick?
We have David Turner. David, who are we talking about?
We're talking today about Beatrice Arthur, yes. A.K.A. B.
B. Arthur.
Bay Arthur.
Bay Arthur. Yeah. She's like the queen bee.
You know what I wish?
What if you started the beehive, but the B.E.A. hive?
Hold on. You know what I wish I had done? Ask me again who we're doing today.
Who are we doing today?
Bernice Frankel.
Yeah.
Bernice Frankel is her real name.
Let's start with that.
David Turner is an amazing actor who always makes me howl with laughter whenever I see him on stage because he's so funny.
Because he doesn't know his lines.
Because he doesn't know his lines, and he usually stands in this kind of funny, weird way.
And he's not a man, and he's not a boy.
He falls off the stage iconically and every time.
And not yet a woman.
One big tumble.
Yeah, he's in this weird in-between space.
And he has also liked our podcast and was really excited. You were excited to come.
Yeah, no, yeah. I was basically begging. It was humiliating. I love your podcast. And if there's one person I would love to talk about, it's Bernice Frankel.
That's your girl?
Oh, my God.
That's your For the Girl?
Yeah, she does it for me.
Yeah?
She's my, what Bette Midler is to you, she's my.
She's your light.
She's your number one.
She is. She's just, I just imprinted on her. She's just everything I love.
When did you first see or hear her mellifluous tones?
You know, it's interesting. I feel like the story always for my generation, I was born in 1974, is like, oh, well, I would watch the Golden Girls with my grandmother, you know, on Saturday night. And that's not how it happened for me. My grandmother was born 2 years before Bea Arthur. And so I think there's a lot of qualities that they share belonging to that generation. And I think I see in B a lot of the things I loved in my grandmother, who was kind of my best friend. But she was not a TV watcher. So for me, it was actually post-college when I moved to New York, when it was on Lifetime from 5 to 6 p.m. and then 11 to midnight. It was just part of my day. That was when, so it was really in syndication that I started to appreciate the Golden Girls. And then looked for Maude, and it was the longest time before Maude was available at all. It's still hard to get. You have to buy the DVDs.
Yeah, the abortion episode is on YouTube.
Yeah.
In fall, which is really
great. But it wasn't like TV Land was circulating Maude.
That's fucked up.
Isn't it? You can stream season one, but the rest you have to order the DVDs.
On what streaming service?
Oh, God, I can't remember. Something weird.
It's on Netflix or Hulu. Either one can sponsor us.
Everyone has a streaming thing now, though, so it could be literally on anything.
I know. It's probably on the Criterion Collections channel with Now and Then and Palms.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Diane. and all of the movies we've ever done, because
exactly.
They're very important.
So you did your deep dive into the goal. Would you just rewatch? You just, they're on all the time.
Yeah,
I feel like every day of the minute of the week.
I think when I get old, if I get dementia, the last thing that's going to be available to me is episodes of the Golden Girls. That's how many times I think I've watched. There's those neurological grooves are so well worn. That's going to be what's left.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that's my wall E. When the rest of David Turner is stripped away, it's just going to be pieces
just
of
quotes
B.
From the Golden Girls, just quips and quotes.
What favorite episode?
Rusty Anchor.
What is Rusty Anchor? Give it to us. Give us the plot synopsis.
B is down in the dumps as usual, you know, can't get a date. And Blanche convinces her to go to her hangout, which is the Rusty Anchor. And B goes, and she's uncomfortable, you know, she's awkward at conversation, and then there's a pianist there. And she sort of starts humming, and he goes, hey, you've got a nice voice. Why don't you sing something? No, I really could. Come on. No, I really, what'll I do? D flat is good for me. You know, and suddenly she blooms, and she sings What'll I Do, and heads start to turn, and Blanche gets jealous, and that sets the plot in motion.
I don't think so.
You sing, don't you?
A little. Great. How about some Irving Berlin?
Blue skies, always.
Maybe some other time.
What'll I do?
D flat is good for me. What'll I do if you away and I am blue? What'll I do?
Very nice.
What'll I do when I am wondering who is kissing you? What'll I do?
You're very good, though.
What'll I do with just a photograph to tell my troubles to? When I'm alone with only dreams of you that won't come true, what'll I do? What'll I do with just a photograph to tell my troubles to? When I'm alone with only dreams,
yeah,
of you.
She can act a song. She really can. And it's a great song. So, remember the letter I showed you that I wrote? I wrote B. Arthur and she wrote it. And it was about this. That's, yeah, that's. So she wrote, I wrote back, I wrote her and I said, you know, I was in 1999. So I must have been about 3 years old. I wrote her, and
she
I just...
already said your birth year.
Yeah, I know.
You're
no,
fucked.
It's too late to be discreet.
You're fucked. You're not going to get any dates. This is for old queens only.
You said your birth year, and I started trying to think about it, and I was like, honey, I can't do math. So I,
all right, well,
so I think a lot of the kids can't either.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's all right. So I wrote her, and I mean, first of all, I went on about her comedy and just how what she does really... really does it for me, you know, her economy and her relaxation. She's such a great comedian.
How did you know where to send it?
I think I found it online.
You found her whatever address?
Yeah, like, it was her home address.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
Because you're speaking, you know, they remember celebrities have like fan
sure
mailing addresses that
yeah it was
could,
a
like,
whole cottage
yeah.
industry
yeah whole yeah. thing that you could like write into and maybe they would get it or maybe they wouldn't, you know, back in the old fan days.
Yeah,
anyways.
Totally.
But I love that you could just send it right there to her.
But also in the 90s when they were figuring out that, I remember that transition between like the phone book and like finding shit on the internet. They kind of just threw everything up online and you could find random people's addresses and phone numbers.
Yeah,
it was
a little more Wild West.
Yeah.
Did you handwrite it?
Of course.
Yes.
Oh, of course.
Beautiful.
My WASPy family, absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah. So she wrote back, I don't have time to... I love this opening. Okay. I don't have time to respond to all of my fan mail. But every so often, I receive a note that does make me want to respond, and yours was one of them. Now, I know I've made a lot of people laugh over the years, but to learn I was responsible for introducing someone to Irving Berlin... well, now that makes it all the more worthwhile. I wish you every happiness. Affectionately, B. Arthur.
Oh,
what?
He does not have that in front of him. He has that memorized.
Well, of course. What was... because you were not expecting that. I mean,
no.
Really, you just were like, I just need to tell her I love her.
Yeah. You know, that feeling of connection.
Right.
Yeah.
And so were you just like shaking?
Oh, I think I just, I mean, I think I just
major
put on like white gloves, you know, that like people who are in a handbell choir wear, mm-hmm. and then I folded it back up and I put it, and thank God I've managed to hold on to it for 20 years. You can't see this, you listeners at home, but everyone got goosebumps.
Everyone, huge goosebumps all over our arms. We'll take a picture of them and post them on our Instagram. You can follow us there at For the Girls Podcast. Okay, so Beatrice Frankel.
Bernice.
Oh my gosh, so sorry. Bernice. Mm-hmm. How did it go from Bernice to B?
Well, she was born in New York City and lived in New York City until, until she was 11. And then her family was in a bad way financially. The Depression took hold, and they had some kind of business opportunity on the eastern shore of Maryland. So they moved to this town called Cambridge, Maryland. And her parents owned a women's clothing shop, I think. And it turns out Bernice, B-U-R-N-I-C-E, was a very common boy's name. And she hated it. She hated it from the moment she heard it. She hated it. So she asked people to call her B as in the letter B, just because that was what it started with. But she hated Bernice immediately because there were so many boys called Bernice.
Oh my gosh, Bernice.
Yeah.
That went out of style, huh?
I know.
You don't got much more. I don't have many Bernices walking around anymore.
I hope like Gwyneth or like Amelia Clark or some famous blonde woman names their kid Bernice and
it just comes back like wildfire.
It doesn't have the same ring as Apple.
But I've no. Well, Apple. I love apples. That's such a good name. Orange and Apple.
They're not called Orange and Apple.
No, but I just throwing that in there. Wouldn't that be lovely?
Just citrus in general.
But old names are coming back for real. That's like antique names are really
like what?
I
everything old is new again.
Yeah. I don't know. We could look up the baby names for 2019. But like, yeah,
Gladys.
Gertrude. Yeah,
sure. Do you know you can go on the Social Security website and enter any name and it will show you how popular it has been through.
Do they have like a chart? Do they have an app?
Yeah. It's on their website. Yeah. It's great. You can see like how common your name has been since the inception of Social Security.
Nick is crazy common.
I'm still sad. Sure. I'm crazy about telling people Jason isn't. I just had this conversation already
with
once.
Me.
Yeah, with you. With I was like, Jason's not that common. I'm going to keep saying that. And all of my friends think I'm fucking crazy.
You are fucking crazy.
But I have a brother named John, so I'm like, well, I'm not as common as fucking John.
Yeah.
Yeah. But B also, like us, went to boarding school for her last 2 years of high school.
That's right. Do you know why that happened?
No, why? Tell us.
She got sick. She got really sick. She had this weird disorder. I think it's called coagulopathy. And I think the symptoms are basically like those of hemophilia. Her blood wouldn't clot.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Here's the thing. Here's the missing piece. I don't know why boarding school cures coagulopathy, but it might be one of those old-fashioned things like, oh, you know, you have pneumonia, you need to go to Arizona. I don't know.
Where was the boarding school? Pennsylvania?
Yes. I actually think it was called Lititz. It makes me want to say Lititz, but I don't unfortunately
that boarding
think
school
it's
is
called
Lititz.
Yeah.
Bay and Lititz.
It must be French.
Hey, Gwyneth or Amelia Clark or something, name your next kid Lititz.
Yeah.
Please.
Or again, Orange.
Lititz, Apple,
Orange,
citrus.
Lititz, and Bernice.
Yeah. Bernice, how many times do I have to tell you?
And so is that where she like found drama?
According to her, it was earlier than that. It's the age-old story. This is, you know, I know we'll get to, like, why the gays? Why B? Why the gays?
No, we won't.
No, we started skipping that.
First of all,
we
don't do that part anymore.
I don't know who told you that I was gay, but I do not. My wife is going to be furious. anyway.
Honey, I was listening to For the Girls Podcast and you were on it.
Yeah, right.
Well, because this podcast is for wives and moms. So you were just into
the archer because you said she was hot.
But I will say this. I think it's the classic misfit thing that people with a great sense of humor so often go through. By the time she was 12, she was about only a half inch shorter than I am. So I think she was 5'9 and a half by the time she was 12. And she became the class clown. I mean, they were the only Jewish family within miles in Cambridge, Maryland. And they had this giant daughter with a deep voice. And she says that's when she realized she could do a great Mae West impression. And that was sort of what drew the world toward her. And she kind of realized that she wanted to be in showbiz. She didn't take herself seriously for a long time, but I think that was the first little bug.
And then she ended up at the New School for Social Research with Irwin Piscator and were she and Elaine Stritch there at the same time?
I don't know the answer to that.
Let's keep
the fantasy alive.
In my mind, they are, because they're the same. I think Elaine's a little bit older.
Yeah.
But Elaine was there with Brando, and it's such a huge part of her at Liberty Show talking about being at the New School for Social Research.
Yeah.
I like to think that they were like doing scenes from Top Girls together. That was written before the 1940s, right?
I don't. Yeah, I mean,
what's
the
lesbian one?
Stop Kiss?
No, the hour, something out, the Children's Hour.
Children's Hour.
They're straight up doing the Children's Hour.
Oh my gosh.
That is so fucking fun to see like sophomores in high school do the Children's Hour.
Things changed.
Everyone in acting school, please drop out. It's a terrible profession. Don't do it. Quit your scene study class now. I'm discouraging everybody.
Or do what B did and marry one of your classmates.
Who did she marry?
Well, first she married Robert Allen Arthur, which is where she got the name.
Husband number one.
They were only married for 3 years. And then the year she split up with him, she married Jean Sachs.
That's right. She was married to Jean Sachs.
Who was also in that class.
Oh.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit? Can we remind me a little bit more about Jean Sachs' career?
Yeah, sure. He was mostly a director.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he did a lot of Broadway shows, most notably, of course, Mame.
Right.
And, but his muse, I think, was really New York. And when B. Arthur had her association with Norman Lear and finally was wooed out to L.A., kicking and screaming, really, at first, that was the beginning of the end for their marriage, because he, especially after Mame flopped, the movie of Mame flopped. I guess I shouldn't talk about flops yet, but.
You
saved that for Flops and Bops.
For Flops and
Bops.
I don't know. I remember I bought that movie on VHS because I was a Lucille Ball fan, and I remember just being like, what the fuck?
I remember the day you got it.
Yeah,
we went to your grandma's house, and we watched it in the basement. Like,
we were too young to know that it wasn't good, though.
We were in love.
Really?
We didn't know any other version.
We were like 7 years old.
Yeah, sure.
And we didn't know that Angela Lansbury got.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Full
thoughts
on it, but.
Oh, I know they Carol Channing'd her ass.
Yeah, they really, really did.
Devastating.
That was real weird. I mean, well, I guess it
except
was
for the fact that Marilyn Monroe had a hit with "Gentlemen Prefer Blondes" and Lucy did not have a hit with Mame.
Right?
No, she sure didn't. That sunk her Lucy ship. I feel like Mame was the thing that really sunk her.
Yeah.
So funny. We've been talking about that Lucy so much. I mean, that Mame so much. We talked about it. We did a Patti LuPone episode the other day, and then
can't wait.
We talked about it, and we also talk about it in the Madeline Kahn episode, which everyone listening to this, you can go back and download the Madeline Kahn episode. It's a few episodes back, and then you can rate and review the podcast. Thank you very much.
Have you seen B. Arthur's Intimate Portraits?
Oh,
like 2002.
Yeah, of
right.
Course,
she talks about that going to L.A. kind of was
right.
Yeah, the thing that his love was theater.
Yeah,
and she was becoming a big star, which I think was kind of, and he wasn't. You know, he wasn't really kind of rising up with her. So I think there was some of that too.
Yeah, I think gender plays a big part in that relationship failing. I think for a man, especially in that generation, when his wife starts to become a superstar and his career is flagging a little bit, I think it takes a hell of a man to just be happy for her and
especially
kind of stick
back
with
in that
it.
Day, right?
That's what I mean. Yeah,
it's hard today, you know.
Yeah,
you know, it's
they're
really,
fragile. Yeah. Fucking.
That's
egos.
Why my wife is so mad that I'm here doing
it. Yeah. No,
sweet, poor sweet
Bonnie. It's okay. Yeah. Thank you for listening to the
She's
podcast.
Such
every
a
week.
Dear.
You put up with so much.
She's so lovely. She don't know the half of it.
God bless her. She's really more man than you are. It was always blows my mind to remember that Estelle Getty was the youngest one.
Yeah, well, actually, I don't think she was younger than Rue.
Oh, was she not?
She's younger than Betty White and Bea Arthur, I believe.
Oh, wow.
I believe.
So Estelle Getty played Sophia for all of you. We have a lot of young fans who can't keep the names of these ladies straight.
Okay, well, we'll help.
Yeah, but you, I mean, the Golden Girls shelf life is just always shocking me. I was just telling Nick, like, there's not any one demographic that I don't know that does not hold the Golden Girls as, like, a beloved artifact. Still, like, I still feel like people, it's like, it just keeps shining, probably because it's, like, always on and you can always catch it, and it just emits this feeling in so many people.
Like, I think they were very restrained about going to the topical humor well, and that paid major dividends. You know, once in a while they have a joke like, no, Rose, you know, she's upset because they keep changing the taste of Coke. And you're like, well, okay, but that's very rare.
But it's still funny because of her delivery.
That's why it kind of transcends time.
Yeah.
You can kind of always watch it and...
Right.
Because old ladies, they had that older gay ladies in Florida always, like, are kind of stuck in time, too.
Did you remember this? They had the pilot, right? There was the gay housekeeper.
Yeah, Coco.
Coco. Mm-hmm. Did you know that?
Coco is the gay housekeeper. Yeah. And they also have an iconic lesbian episode where a woman who's a friend of Dorothy's comes and falls in love with Rose.
Correct. Yeah, Jean.
Jean. It's one of the best. I think it's one of
the best.
It's wonderful.
It's such a beautiful episode.
Is that Lois Nettleton, I think, is her name? She's wonderful.
Jean thinks she's in love with Rose. Oh, come on, it's not funny.
The hell it's not. Jean in love with Little Miss Muffet. Come on. What is going on?
Nothing.
Oh, come on now. I heard you laughing. What's so funny?
For starters, Jean is a lesbian.
What's funny about that?
You aren't surprised?
Of course not. I mean, I've never known any personally, but... Isn't Danny Thomas one?
Not Lebanese, Blanche. Lesbian.
Lesbian.
The guest spots on the Golden Girls, too.
People
who would come through.
So great.
George Clooney's on it.
Yeah, he and Jerry Orbach play cops. They're doing a stakeout because there are diamond thieves next door.
Of course there are.
It's so great.
Because of course there are.
Yeah.
Diamond thieving. I'm not like Wait, a thief hold for on. I could be wrong.
Hold on, I don't think it's Jerry Orbach. I think I am bad with faces, and I think I turned it into Jerry Orbach. I don't want cards and letters, please, about how I got that wrong.
Battle Angels, calm down, leave our guests alone.
There are people that, I mean, people memorize these episodes.
Alexis Michelle is like that.
Yes, I have a couple. I know a couple of people who just like know.
Yeah.
Our friend Alexis Michelle, who's a fabulous drag queen who did our Liza Minnelli episode. She, when I'm over at her house and we just want to like go and like smoke a little bowl and like order some food and she wants to stone some tights and we just want to hang out. It's just Golden Girls. We'll watch like 8 episodes or AbFab.
Who's more stoned, the tights or you?
That was a Golden Girls one right there.
Well, that's why I get the big bucks.
I once Phyllis, I was living in a house full of boys in college, and I fell asleep while watching a Golden Girls DVD, and it just went back to the credit, or just went back to the main menu, and where it was just like the orchestration of the theme song, and I guess that played on a loop for like 5 hours
until
like one of my roommates was like, "Stop it! Stop it!" I had completely broken him down by this just like
you can sleep looping some shit though.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay, but we're on the Golden Girls and we've completely skipped over her first iconic series, which is Maude, which started as a spinoff from All in the Family.
Mm-hmm. Have you seen that episode of All in the Family with her?
Yeah, I think she did two episodes of All in the Family.
Right.
But the way she tells it, the next day, CBS.
Right.
First of all, I love also, this also is so of the time, get that girl her own series.
Yes, like exactly, she was right?
50 years old, get that girl.
And it was CBS, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's so funny, just a side note to A Terrible Man, I was, when all the Les Moonves shit happened.
Yeah.
I guess it was Les Moonves who was single-handedly responsible for the cancellation of Murder, She Wrote. And he was like, we're done. The quote was, we're done with old ladies at CBS. And he got rid of, I think, not only Murder,
I guess
She Wrote,
I'm out.
But also The Golden Palace, the spinoff of Golden Girls.
Well, that deserved to go.
Yeah. I feel like this is like the moment where my eyes turn red and I'm able to have like laser beams that shoot out of my head. And the fire starts coming up on the curtains and I rise above and like release my full satanic powers because...
Against Les Moonves.
Yes. Yes, I really feel it. So, it's what so, the fuck?
Whoever was running CBS who said, get that girl her own series, that... I want to know who that gay man was who used to run CBS, because I was on point in the 70s, 80s, and 90s.
Yeah. Yeah, obviously. I think Norman Lear, he really wanted to see Archie get his comeuppance. Mm-hmm. And All in the Family was based on a British show. I can't remember if it was Till Death Do Us Part or Till Death Us Do Part. I can't remember which phrasing they used. But there was a Cousin Maud on that. And so he must have gotten the idea because they bought the rights to All in the Family to do that in America. Mm-hmm. But the whole thing was just a vehicle to finally see someone stand up to Archie.
Right.
Yeah, and I think that Norman Lear wanted a little bit of wish fulfillment just to see his own his own values and his own principles. You know, he started this great nonprofit called People for the American Way, which I love and support, which is, I think, a great antidote to so much of what we're dealing with now about just what values this country can and should stand for. And I think he wanted a character to give voice to those values.
And she was so unflappable. Whereas Archie was surrounded by the three most flappable people on earth in Edith and Meathead and Gloria, who were always like, so he could just rile them up so easily, you know, or knock them off balance. Nothing can knock Maud or Bea Arthur off balance.
Yeah.
What was it like watching knowing her kind of as this ham in the Golden Girls and then, and kind of, you know, getting that in you and then going back to Maud?
It's interesting. I mean, let's go to Bea's own words. She said, look, I'm 5'9" and a half in my stocking feet. I have a very deep voice and a way with a line. No one's going to ask me to play Juliet. I think it's a complete waste of time. We're actors who worry about typecasting. I mean, the characters that she played, the battle axes, the acerbic wit, always with the perfect line, it apparently could not be farther from her actual personality.
Right, because she's iconically like a withdrawn, she's quiet person.
Shy, very reserved.
I feel like that's what everyone will, like, in the end says about her.
Yeah.
They're like, really, like, you don't really quite know her because she's actually just very private.
Right.
Which is so interesting because you think she's just this.
How could she not be what she seems like? And that's one of the things I admire about her is she... Or, you know, long before people were talking about branding, she got what she was. She got what she seemed like to other people. And she knew that trying to fight that was a fool's errand. So she just took that thing and heightened it and cornered the market, you know?
Right. And like zoomed in on it.
Yeah.
And drew the specificity of that character, that type. It then becomes universal by giving that person, Maud or Dorothy, as many facets as humanly possible.
Yeah.
I was talking a lot with someone recently about being an extroverted introvert, which, like, I read this art. Someone posted this article about that, and I read it, and I was like, oh, that's me, actually, which lots of people, like, roll their eyes at extroverted introverts when they say that.
I'm doing it. I was just, like, trying not to look at you. I was like,
But it's this thing of, like, yeah, everyone fucking says that, but it is how I feel, and I think that Bea Arthur has that, and I think Bette has that. I mentioned her first, because Bette always talks about how she created the Divine Miss M as this, it's a character. And she really feels most at home, most comfortable, like at home in her garden or reading a book. Like she really wants to be very insular with her family, with her life, and not, you know, the Divine Miss M is a creation that helps her make money and sell songs and be artistic.
And exercise a part of her.
Right.
Yeah, I guess I was rolling my eyes, but I am that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know I am that. Like, yeah, I go out and I'm a clown and I put on the party,
mm-hmm.
you know, this thing.
And, Mr. Ha-Ha.
And, yeah, Mr. Ha-Ha, kind of Mr. like, going to tell you a real, real fun story and life of the party, but actually, like, I need to really withdraw a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, and then just, like, be alone and quiet. Actually, it's some really my... I always say, like, I just love when I'm with myself because I'm the smartest person in the room. and all of my ideas are so great and I'm constantly agreeing with myself, you know. So, yeah, there is that... I think, yeah, there is a duality.
Hey, I remember reading that to figure out if you're an extrovert or an introvert, answer the question, what do you do to recharge your batteries?
Right. And mine is absolutely being alone. Like, yeah. I love being alone. If I find out, like, I get a job, like, especially if I get to, like, travel somewhere, and, like, I know I'm going to be filming somewhere else, and I know I'm, like, I'm going to get to live in a hotel room alone for 2 weeks.
Heaven.
I'm like, this is heaven to me. Like, turn off the Wi-Fi, leave me alone.
It's actually such an adventure. There's something so thrillingly adventurous about
it. It feels indulgent.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love being alone.
Yeah. Well, we can wrap this up.
Could you please leave both of you?
Thank you, everyone. We're all now, let's all go just to corners of this apartment.
And just sit by ourselves.
Yeah.
No, because my batteries are charged and I'm podcasting right now. I'm fulfilling my duty as an American to have a podcast. Mm-hmm. So when our favorite extroverted introvert, Bea Arthur, got that call from CBS, it was like, we're giving you a show, honey. What was that like for her? She was living in New York at the time.
And primarily doing theater.
I mean, starting in 1964, she did Fiddler for a year. And she, according to her, she only stayed with it for a year. We know from, you know, Maude and the Golden Girls, this is a woman who knows when to get out, mm-hmm. when something is at its peak. Mm-hmm. She's deliciously unsentimental about her work. One of the things I love, when other people are grasping, she's saying, no, I think we've done this enough. I think we've explored every facet of this. I think we should end it while it's at its peak. I mean, that is very rare for an actor, I think, not to be grasping in that way. But she stayed in Fiddler for a year because Jean Sachs had hepatitis and couldn't work. And so she was the breadwinner.
That's a production Bette got in, right?
Yeah, but so Bette was started in 66.
Yeah.
Isn't that cool?
I know, because when I first read that, I was like, holy fuck, she was in Fiddler with Bette. They were in a show.
But I don't think they crossed paths.
I thought that, but then I was like, there's no way.
Because Mame was in 66.
Yeah.
Angela Lansbury is she's one of, I was very close with B.
Oh, right? Yeah. No, they were besties. Yeah. They're very good friends.
So isn't that just, I mean, come on, someone write a play about that. But what a fantasy.
Wasn't Bea trying to get the part of Mame?
Oh, yeah. And according to Angela, never really got over it.
Really?
Well, her husband was directing.
Yeah.
But they wanted a star.
Yeah.
Well, and I mean, to lose a star gig on Broadway to Angela Lansbury, the greatest Broadway star of all time, is like...
Also, Vera is such a good role. Come on.
That's the thing. I mean, I agree, but I keep asking myself, what actor would pass up Vera Charles? I mean, it's a great role. But if you remember that she hadn't yet been Maude or Dorothy,
right.
She may not yet have really had an idea that that was the quality that was going to take her all the way.
Mm. Right.
So she wanted to, you know, in her own words, she wanted to be the one in the white dress, not the black dress. That's
yes.
how she that, saw that, herself.
Yes.
And so funny. I want to be in that black dress.
Isn't that funny? Yeah.
I want to be on that moon, honey.
God, that moon is bright.
Don't you want a little cutout moon? A little cutout paper, smiling moon? Mm. Mm.
Mm. So how many years was she in Mame?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Well, long enough for them both to win their Tonys.
Yep. Well, here's a good little mnemonic device if you want to remember her award journey
I
in
do.
Life.
Yes, I do. I need I advice. Love every I love time award. I'm sitting on the train, I'm like, what is my
it's
device?
Very
to
easy
remember?
With B. Yeah. It's very easy. It's okay. Just like sunspots. They're on 11 year cycle, 66, 77, wow. and 88.
Wow.
She won the Tony in 66, the Emmy for Maude in 77, the Emmy for Golden Girls in 88. Wow. So there
was
you
she
go.
The. Wait, did Bette win?
Bette won first.
Oh, okay.
That did not go over
in
well.
Stereo.
Yeah.
Who do you think B was just like tossing her china around the room?
Oh, yeah. I read Betty White's autobiography. She said day one, season two, was just like, oh, well, like chilly.
on the chilly. Look, she didn't like set. Betty White.
Well, look, I don't want to speak for. I mean, everything I've said so far, sure. I've read an interview or seen Bea Arthur say it herself.
Speak for her now. She's dead. She can't do anything to you.
I thought what Betty White did was pretty cruel and pretty classless. To wait until someone's dead, it was like Bill Barr. You know what the Attorney General did with the Mueller report? Just, it comes out, you give it a little spin, and now that's what the public thinks. So Betty White waits until Bea Arthur dies and has this great line, clearly very prepared to frame the whole thing, which is,
Bea was not that fond of me, but
yeah,
I loved.
Yeah, why, no, I've heard that.
I don't know.
What is
I
that
don't know
about?
What I ever did. I don't know, but she was not that thrilled with me. But I loved Bea, and I admired her, and I just, and I can't believe I'm the only one left.
Mm. When she did that, I thought, I don't know, that struck me as, when someone's not there to defend themselves, I just thought, I saw a little crack in Betty White's character, and I really like her, but I thought, I don't know, I thought that was tough.
And, like, I haven't heard this, just some insider thing, but, like, Betty White's a full fucking bitch, is what they say. On
you want to know what girl we're not for? Betty White.
Okay, wait,
come
no,
us,
we're
bitch.
Fucking full kidding. We're full fucking kidding.
We love Betty White.
We love Betty White.
I mean, yes, that's the thing. I mean, we don't know any of these people, but
yeah, I've read
when someone's dead, I don't think it's nice to...
Sure.
Set,
and what are you going to get out of it? What do you need, you know, like, what's the point?
Betty White? Well, like, yeah, but that's the thing. She's always on the make. That's why she's had a career that's, you know, 70 mm-hmm. years long. She's smart about the public.
From my understanding, not from Betty White, but from other things I've read, Bea's thing with Betty White, and this could be completely wrong, was that she was so on the make. She was such a kind of a creature of Hollywood.
Exactly.
Yeah. She went for the laugh. She played to the audience.
She showed a little leg.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was a kind of a vaudevillian in that way. She was a real comic, and Bea was a real actress.
I mean, that's the thing. It's like they're both brilliant. They're just mm-hmm. very different people.
Yeah. And the energy all just works. I mean,
that's what makes it, that frisson is what makes it work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
But Bea's the realism that Bea brings. I know that you said, like, the ham of the Golden Girls, but she also is so fucking real on that show and on Maude.
Oh, she breaks your heart. There's some really, really amazing tightrope walking that she does on those shows that's like laugh, 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 and then, whoo, she twists it just a little bit. She kind of drops the mask, mm-hmm. you know, very strategically to kind of, you know, make you in those feelings for her. And
yeah, if I had one, I mean, the great thing I think about her is anytime she was interviewed about it, all she would say is the writing. That's all she ever said about Maude or the Golden Girls, the writing. I mean, here was a woman who completely understood that she wasn't funny. It was. Mm-hmm. You know, she just completely gave all the credit to the writing and to the script and did her best to just get out of the way. She said her inspiration, she said Sid Caesar taught her the outrageous. Lee Strasberg taught her reality. And Lottie Lenya taught her economy.
Oh.
She said those were her three inspirations.
Wow.
And I think you see that.
Economy is such a great word for her.
Isn't it?
She never uses an ounce of energy that she doesn't need to.
Exactly.
Ever. Well, not when you have those eyebrows.
Too much.
You just got to raise them here and there, and you know exactly what's going on.
Can you picture when, I think it's Blanche and Sophia and Bea are on the couch, and Sophia's come back from the shoe store, and she has a balloon?
Sophia, there's something I don't understand. Now, you're always a bit ornery, unpleasant, impolite, even downright mean. That's part of your charm.
Thank you, you bed-hopping relic. I'm trying to make is your behavior in the shoe thing is extreme, even for you. What is going on? Well,
so Bea's not doing anything. She's not holding a balloon, and she's not popping the balloon. And she doesn't move an atom. Her stillness is like a level above ordinary stillness. I swear to God, she has like just on a molecular level of restraint and stillness, and that's to get out of the way of someone else's joke.
Right.
And that to me is like the highest form of comedy.
Because she wanted the ship to sail.
Yeah.
You know, she wanted to be, and it was a team. It was a real team on that show, and you had to, the teamwork between the four of them is so extraordinary.
Delicious.
I have a hot take.
Yeah.
Hey,
alert,
hey,
alert.
Okay, hey, everyone watch. Hey, pause.
Everyone
press. I want you to press pause because I don't want. No.
Everyone who's listening, be sure you're fucking sitting down.
You stop the recording.
What's happening?
You stop the recording and let me just prattle on and then press play again. you fucker. The Golden Girls were the OG Sex in the City.
Absolutely.
Especially with that game I hate, which I hate. I've said it so many times. I fucking hate when everyone's like, I'm Samantha, I'm Carrie. Mostly because I'm none of them.
It's such a Miranda thing to say.
I hate. But I remember everyone playing that game with the Golden Girls. But like, oh, I'm the Rue of the bunch.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. Yeah.
Like, I definitely always feel like a Dorothy.
You're a Dorothy? Yeah, you're a Dorothy.
I'm a hardcore Dorothy. You're a hardcore Dorothy.
Hardcore voice of reason.
I'm obviously fucking Betty White. Like, I'm flighty. And
Billy is a full Betty White.
Yeah.
My boyfriend is a full-ass Betty White.
I'm a pretty... Yeah, I mean,
you
I'm
have a little Blanche to you, too.
Yeah, that's...
Just because you're a whore.
Yeah, that's nice. That's every 3 years. Not really. I mean, Blanche is a full whore, like, every half hour. She's just, like, full whore trained.
But she was so sex-positive. It was, like... One of the first really sex-positive characters on TV.
Totally.
And, like, that fun kind of...
They all
that,
were.
Yeah, they all were. They all were dating.
Yeah.
They were just dating up that Florida storm.
Mm-hmm. They loved to fuck.
And they bought condoms to show that it was the socially responsible thing to do.
Absolutely.
Do you remember that episode?
Remember that.
Oh, in the pharmacy?
Yeah.
They all get up the nerve to get some condoms, and then it's a price check.
Joe, I need a price check on some condoms. These three ladies here want a couple of boxes of the King George prophylactics.
Lambskins are the ultra-sensitive.
Two of them have the lambskins, and the blonde has the ultra-sensitive in black.
Lambskins are $12.95, the black's $1 extra.
Look at all these people staring at us. Oh, this is humiliating. I've never been so embarrassed in my life.
All right, just what in hell are all of you staring at? Haven't you ever seen three vibrant, healthy, sexually active women before? Now, we are embarking on a little weekend cruise with some longtime gentlemen friends, and if we decide to be intimate, then we'll be prepared. We are not embarrassed. We're not uncomfortable. We are not humiliated. We're going to walk out of here today with our heads held high, secure in the knowledge that what we have done is morally and socially responsible. Isn't that right, girl?
I have no idea who this woman is. I bought these for my brother.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
But don't you think it's sort of Jungian, like they're all pieces of us, and that all exists in us, and what part of the enjoyment of watching it is these pieces of ourselves kind of fighting for primacy, you know?
Well, we just watched the Cher show, so we know everything about that.
Do you think it was just magic that we got the Golden Girls? Like, do you think it was just the stars were aligned and the time was right, and somehow America was ready to welcome in a show about not even middle-aged women. They were older than that.
That's a really good question. I mean, I don't know if I can do much more than be grateful that it happened, but I'm more inclined to credit a lot of hard work on the part of the people who, on part of Susan Harris and people who fought especially for Bea, because she did not I mean, kicking and screaming, basically.
And she was one of the last cast.
She was the last.
And they wrote the character, right? They said, like, they said it, B. Arthur character.
Yeah, type, yeah. Type, I think Susan Harris definitely had her in mind. Susan Harris wrote the abortion two-parter in for Maude.
Right.
So she certainly knew B. Arthur's voice.
I'm just going to drop in on that and give a little footnote. Maude, on B. Arthur's first series, Maude, which we were talking about, which is the spinoff of All in the Family, there's a two-part episode where Maude, B. Arthur's character, gets pregnant. It'd be like a, you know, a fairly late in life pregnancy.
Yeah, it was a menopausal. I think she was 40. The character was 47.
Yeah, and she... And her husband grapple with the decision of whether or not to have an abortion.
Oh, Walter, it's so silly. It's really dumb. I mean, it's not just that I'm scared. It's like deep down inside me, there's a teeny part of me that feels guilty for even thinking about it.
Well, I'll tell you this, Maude. Whatever you decide is going to be all right with me.
Thank you, Walter.
I'll tell you something else, too. To make sure this doesn't happen again, I'm going to have that vasectomy.
You really mean that, Walter?
Why not? It's a simple operation.
Like going to the dentist.
Well, maybe I ought to think about it. And you, Mort?
I don't know. I don't know. I guess I'll just have to think about it, too.
Sweetheart. Whatever you decide.
Walter, don't pat me there. That's what started this whole thing.
And it was two episodes long, and there were lots of affiliates across our amazingly weird and conservative country who would not play it. But when it aired, it got 65 million viewers. Like, you guys, that's fucking more than Game of Thrones got. Like, that's a lot. And granted, there were only four stations back then.
But also think how many Americans there were. I mean, that's 65 million out of what, 150 million? I mean, how big was the country then? It's a huge fraction.
Yeah, it was so many people watch. I mean,
it's kind of crazy because you even think of, because drawing the line back to I Love Lucy, remember, they wouldn't even show
them sleep in bed together.
Yeah, or
and they had to say expecting instead of pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And then drawing the line back to Maude, Rue was on Maude, and then it was...
Yes, she played Vivian, Maude's sort of airheaded best friend.
And that was her that got her on...
That's right. Yeah. B's initial objection to doing Golden Girls, because Rue called her and said, now B, why are you passing up the best script that's ever going to come across your desk? And apparently B told her, Rue, I have no interest in doing Maude and Vivian meet Sue Ann Nivens. And Rue says, now B, you've got it all wrong. I'm playing the vamp. Betty's playing the airhead. And B says, well, now that's interesting.
Mm.
And that was really what sold her on the whole.
Right, because Sue Ann Nivens, who is Betty White's character from Mary Tyler Moore, mm-hmm. for all of our legendary...
Friendly neighborhood nymphomaniac.
Right, she was the nympho, mm-hmm. and Georgia Engel was the airhead.
Mm-hmm.
Who was a very dear friend of mine who we just lost recently.
Oh.
I've already talked about that in another episode, but anyway.
Well, that's okay, when someone dies...
We're going to break out the
Ouija board, rest in power, Georgia. Oh my gosh, Georgia would not fuck with a Ouija board. She was a mad Christian scientist. Like, she was a serious Christian. She wouldn't be very...
You don't think she would come if we call her a me down...
Absolutely.
From the Diva Heavens?
No, Georgia is a mad Christian. Like, yeah, she's probably upset that I'm even talking about her on this podcast, but I love her so much I can't stop myself. I hope she forgives me.
She's great. She's a wonderful... She was a wonderful actor.
Wasn't she a delight?
You know what? You were speaking earlier, Jason, about how, like, B has a super real, sensitive side. And my complaint about actually... more Golden Girls than Maude is that they didn't ask that of her a lot. And that's not her fault. They just saw where their bread was buttered and kept kind of heightening that.
Mm-hmm.
And if there are any listeners who aren't familiar with Maude or they want to get the DVDs, there is an episode in season 4, I think it's called Maude Bears Her Soul. And it is so extraordinary. It's back when there was like event television. It is the usual sitcom format. for that time, 24 minutes and two acts, and it's a monologue. She's the only character in the entire episode.
What?
She goes to see a shrink, and the shrink never talks. It's just, it's a therapy session.
And that's the whole episode?
It's the whole episode, and she is incredible. Like, waterworks, and just this incredible, real... It just breaks down the character of Maude, the acerbic thing. She questions why she does it. It gets so real in a way that sitcom characters had never before had dimension. She's talking about her parents, why she is the way she is, what she thinks about her father. And she's incredible. I mean, she's incredible in that episode. Hmm. That's, if I could make your listeners watch or listen to one B. Arthur thing, that would be it.
It's such a difference now with sitcoms. So much of the sourcing of comedy television these days comes from the improv world,
mm-hmm, yeah,
and no longer from the theater world.
Yeah.
And it's so focused on, like, can you make stuff up? Can you do an impression? Can you do a funny thing? Do you have, like, a fun... like, not to diminish what people in improv comedy do, because it's extraordinary.
Yeah.
But I do think that there's a serious lack in that very serious comedy with those, like, major theater actors.
Yeah.
You know?
I agree.
That it can be so funny and so deep.
Yeah.
I can't think of a show, a comedy show now that...
that goes like that. There.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's the okay. car horn.
She did not adopt, did she?
Did she adopt two children?
Yeah, she and Gene Sachs adopted two boys.
Oh,
yes. I fucking love people who adopt.
I know.
It's my favorite thing.
Yeah. Matthew and Daniel Sachs, 1961, 1964.
And she's a huge pita person,
too. Yes.
Yes, oh my gosh, those commercials are fun.
Hi, I'm B. Arthur with a message for women who take Premarin. Don't. It's made of horse urine. I'm not kidding. Please call PETA for free information on effective animal-friendly brands.
Oh, yeah, some of those.
PETA commercials?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I wish she'd had a talk with someone about the lighting in those commercials.
Weird, right?
Very
she's, like,
weird.
She's, at a barn, and it's really bright and out.
Her hair is in the sunlight, but her face is in the shade. It's like a Joan Crawford, like, Venetian blind shot. Like, it's very particular.
The 80s, they never really knew how to light it.
And this is what I was talking to Nick about, is that she didn't give a fuck about fame.
No.
I'm so inspired by that.
I am too.
Like, she's all about the craft, she's about the work, but in the end of the day, she just does not want anything else.
Totally.
And that's just, again, something you don't really ever see.
Mm-mm. Yeah, I was listening to your Barbara Streisand episode, and so I was thinking in my head about the two of them. The only thing they have in common is they both removed a vowel from their names. Like, Arthur, you know, her husband's Arthur had a U in it, and she decided she was just going to take that out. That's the only Barbara-ish thing that I have ever known B to do. I think part of what is mesmerizing about her is she doesn't need us. She can take us or leave us. And that is part of the source of her power. She doesn't have that same neediness that, like, Judy has or Barbara has.
Or
that,
Bette has.
Yeah, yeah. Or that, then that brittleness that comes with that, because we could betray her, you know? She's just kind of an island under herself, and it makes her really different.
That's also something I imagine that as a gay person have always loved about her. She has this strength that I longed for, or that I do continue to long for, that self-assuredness that I think is really hard for people in our community to get, because we spend, or at least we used to, or we continue to, like, there's a lot of time hiding, there's a lot of fear involved, there's a lot of shame involved, and she was just so in the center of herself, and it was aspirational.
It makes me think about self-care. And I think, like, we really lack that now, because our lives are fully on display. Mm. And as creatives and, you know, doing this podcast, you kind of have to be constantly present and presenting. Mm. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like she kind of got it right. You know, she was kind of like, I've done my work. Like, she has that thing where she was like, after I did Golden Girls, I didn't want to ever do another show again. You know, it took her a long time to get to another project, which was her one-woman show, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She was just like, I don't need it. I've done it. I don't have to have that fulfillment. Like, I'm enough. I'm full enough.
I am enough. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, me and my dogs and my bare feet.
Oh my gosh, her dogs are so big. What B. Arthur loved big dogs.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, and I cannot lie. She had two Dobermans.
You should watch her walk around her pool with these big old B and her big old Dobermans.
Is that an intimate portrait?
Yeah. Sure
is. Yeah. For everyone who doesn't know, I'm such like an explainer face today. Intimate Portrait was a series that VH1 used to have about divas back in the 90s, and it was so fucking good, and we wish
it's got a great theme song, too.
What's the theme
song? It's just a lot of sort of miasmic, like, chords, and then her story. I'm like, it's pronounced herstory, Lifetime.
Come on, get it right.
Get with the program.
Oh, it's Lifetime. It's not VH1.
No, it's Lifetime. Lifetime.
So, yeah, speaking of, she then developed this one-woman show that took her years to develop and that she finally brought to Broadway in 2002.
Mm-hmm.
Did she do it anywhere before Broadway?
Yes, she toured. In fact, I saw it in NIAC at the Helen Hayes Theater back when it was unclear whether it would come to Broadway. I didn't want to miss my one chance while it was in NIAC.
What? How was it? What was that like when you went? Tell us everything.
Well,
did you scream, "I wrote you a note"?
God, it's like you know me. I'll be honest. I was disappointed by her one-woman show.
Oh,
yeah, that would be a flop for me.
Oh wow! Okay, let's go. Yeah,
I think it is a great, terrible sort of accident of the cosmos that she literally was doing that show from February to April 2002, while Elaine Stritch
was doing her show.
Because that there's one woman there who wants to be seen completely.
Mm-hmm.
Warts and all.
Yes.
And one woman who really is not comfortable with that.
Right.
The rawness wasn't.
No.
Elaine was full
rawness. It's just
rawner.
Not who she is, you know? Yeah. And it suffered by comparison because when you really. And it's the danger of meeting your idols. You know, they so rarely live up to your expectations. It's that feeling of being in someone's company and feeling like, yeah, you're still not being you is what I came for. You're still not doing the thing I came for, which is not to hear you do 50%.
Right.
The song, not like her level of stamina, the song 50%. It's just like, what is under there? I want to know what's really under there. And I'm afraid I didn't think she really went there. It's awful for me to say because I love her.
I think I've said this. I had the same thing when I first saw Bette in her Kiss My Brass. Like I had done all the reviews and I memorized the set list. And I just remember, and I go so nervous, and I remember being like, she had kind of leaned a little bit more into the cheesy side of it.
It's
she literally does a duet with Mr. Rogers on screen, you know, and it was just, and Nick and I loved the raw Bette so much and the kind of foul.
Bathhouse Betty.
Yeah, the Bathhouse Betty kind of thing of it, and it wasn't there for me, and I was like white knuckling, just wanting her to kind of do that thing, and it was that meeting your idols kind of thing.
Isn't that interesting?
I couldn't relax. I couldn't just let her be her.
Right. I feel guilty bringing that, you know, to that expectation. It feels almost cruel, but you have to acknowledge that it's there and it's part of seeing something like that.
Was there one song that was just like a highlight of the show?
No, not a song. There was a story that I loved.
Which one?
The Silver Gravy Ladle.
Yes, I love that.
You remember
story.
That one?
Yes.
Yeah. Do you want me to do it real fast?
Yeah. Is it on the CD?
It's on the CD, yeah.
I'll put it in.
Yeah, put it in. It's so fantastic. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's called A Mother's Intuition.
Yes.
And she had Charles Pierce read it at her funeral, I believe, or memorial. She didn't have a funeral.
John invited his mother for dinner. And when she arrived, she couldn't help but notice how handsome John's roommate was. I mean, she'd long been questioning John's sexuality, and over the course of the evening, watching the two men interact, she began to wonder if there wasn't a little something more between John and his roommate than met the eye. And John, reading his mother's thoughts, volunteered, "Look, Mom, I know what you're thinking, but I assure you, Michael and I are just roommates." Well, about a week later, Michael went to John and said, "You know, ever since your mother was here for dinner, I've been unable to find that beautiful silver gravy ladle. You don't suppose she took it, do you?" John said, "Well, I doubt it, but I'll write and ask her, you know, just to be sure." So he sat down and he wrote, "Dear Mom, I'm not saying you did take a gravy ladle from my house, And I'm not saying you did not take a gravy ladle, but the fact remains one has been missing ever since you were here for dinner. Love, John. And a few days later, he received a letter from his mother, which read, "Dear son, I'm not saying you do sleep with Michael. And I'm not saying you do not sleep with Michael. But the fact remains, if he'd been sleeping in his own bed, he would have found the gravy ladle by now. Love, Mom."
So why are you, why do you, why are people eat that much gravy, huh?
Gravy ladle.
Hot take alert.
Here I come, baby. Bops and flops. You were saying Mame is your flop.
Let's play Bops and Flops. Bops and Flops is an iconic game we don't always play all the time.
But we love it.
But we love playing it. So let's do some Bops and Flops.
All right.
So let's go to town on this.
We have to... I'm sorry. We cannot skip for Flops the Star Wars Christmas special.
I love that.
Where she's in the cantina?
Oh. She did a Star Wars Christmas special?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
It's infamous, sweetie. It's infamous.
What happened?
She's got this long fall, like a long gray fall, you know, and she's with all these aliens in the cantina. You've never seen so much latex. Well, I haven't been to your bedroom, but she sings this awful song with all these two-syllable rhymes, blank friend. Have a beer, friend. It's been a long year.
Just one more round, friend, then homeward bound, friend. Don't forget me in your dreams. Just one more song, friend, and then so long, friend. The nights get shorter, it seems. Just one more rhyme, friend. Yes, it's a crime, friend. But you know time, friend. Time can fly. So it's good night, friend.
Friend is the laziest writing, first of all. And that's one of the ways that you know that when you love B, you also really love the writing for B. Because when that's not there...
Like when they get her voice.
It's extremely disorienting.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's campy as fucking hell.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know...
I mean, oh, yeah.
Yeah. It kind of, I think, is a cult classic, honestly.
It is, for sure.
So that's a flop. I have a bop.
Okay.
I'm trying to decide what my bop... Oh, my bop is the roast of Pamela Anderson.
Yeah.
That's shit.
Yeah, it's nasty. It's funny. I have a bop. Her on Malcolm in the Middle. It's really touching. She plays a nanny. Mm-hmm. She plays a nanny in one episode, and she kind of... With the little kid, and... And it's a sweet side of B, playful side that she didn't do many guest stars, but she did that.
And she garnered her 11th Emmy nomination for it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. It was like 2001, I think.
I feel gross for just using the word garner.
Yeah.
No, don't.
Just going to say that. I'm going to say she got her 11th Emmy nomination for that.
I like garnered.
We're just three old queens, aren't we?
Like your cousin Bernice.
Bernice. How many times do I have to
do it? So anyway, we're going to give you your... your other flop was...
The movie of Mame is definitely a flop. But, you know, I just kind of want to add a corollary to that. I have a problem with B without a studio audience. She doesn't...
Oh.
Really work the same for me.
The intensity.
It's just not what we're watching for. Like the fun of B is how long can she hold that until it's ripe and then she pricks that balloon. And the whole thing that is fun about watching her is the music between her and the audience and how she keeps it going. And when that's not there, like when you watch Mame, there is something sort of unmoored about it, to me, anyway. So that's...
Well, that's a segue.
My other big bop is she, when she died, she left $300,000 to the Allie Forney Center for LGBTQ+ AI everything homeless kids.
I know.
And I think that was a kind of a... I don't think they were expecting that. They didn't.
No, it was out of the blue, and then suffered a lot of damage in Hurricane Sandy, but they rebuilt it.
They rebuilt it. It's called the B. Arthur Home.
Yeah.
And so if you are, like, fucking looking for a place to donate this... whatever season this episode comes out.
I thought you were going to say if you're looking for a bed. I was like, oh, honey. Or if you talk to the queer youth that are listening to For the Girls podcast right now.
No, if
you may not have a home.
If you are,
but you have a phone.
But you're listening
to this podcast.
You are
to some this people, bougie some people have phones, podcast. But don't have
homes. This is a free podcast. It's free. If you are a bougie,
get old, your basic needs met.
If you are a bougie old gay, why don't you donate to the Allie Forney Center for LGBT Homeless Youth this year? Because that will be a good use of your money.
So now tell us, what draws the gays to Miss B. Arthur?
You know, I'm always reluctant to speak for the clan. You know, I feel like I can only speak for myself. And she sort of belongs to the same world as Carol Channing in a lot of ways, which is that what makes her a freak is very clear, right? Like her height, her voice. There are so many things about her that make her so odd. And the film industry is not kind to those actors. And that's how...
Is it because they don't know what to do with them?
America is not ready for people like that, as far as Hollywood is concerned, you know, in a film. And It's so interesting to me that they, both Carol Channing and Bea Arthur, sort of had middling or non-existent film careers. And I think that that's kind of what it's about. It's not only not ashamed of the thing that makes you a freak, it's hitching your wagon to the thing that makes you special, that makes you weird, that makes you different from everyone. And the message it sends that if you embrace that 100%, look at the possibilities. Mm.
I love that. And I think that there are some...
And I think you're full of shit.
I love that. But you're wrong. And
let me tell you why.
But I think I'll speak for the fucking clan. I think that there is something, obviously masculine about her.
Yeah.
And she leaned into that. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was like, oh, you can... There isn't just one way to be a man or a woman. Like, there's this strong... person who has fully embraced that kind of strength and authority, and she stands proud with her shoulders, you know, wide, and that just was something that was just so captivating to me, and so unique. And also, I think with the Carol Channing thing, there's like, oh man, drag queens are gonna play you both till the end of time, you know. There's that kind of quality to it, and that I found that just so wonderful.
I can't believe no one's ever done Bea Arthur on the Snatch Game.
Yeah, right?
I think she's deceptively hard. I think she's hard on her own. She's so dependent on what's going on around her.
The reacting is what gets the laugh.
Without the setup, without the balloon to deflate, it's a hard color to play.
Right. It's hard to be a straight woman to no one.
Yeah.
Because she is the straight woman to all three of those, you know. Or the foil.
Yeah.
If you have no one to foil.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Exactly, you know? Yeah.
Do you have a favorite, like, bop of, like, a song or a performance of hers that most people, that aren't Maude or Golden Girls, that most people don't know or haven't
seen? Yeah, actually, come to think of it. Oh, I got a, yeah. She hosted Saturday Night Live in 1979. I think it's the fifth episode of season 5 of Saturday Night Live she hosted. And first of all, she opens with a straight-up ballad. There's no joke behind it. She just sings a song at the piano. And the pianist is Paul Schaefer. And it's just a great number. I remember watching it and just thinking, I love when TV had the confidence to say, you know what, we're just going to have Bea Arthur sing. We don't care if it's funny. We don't care if people change the channel.
But it's also to open the show.
Just to open the show, and it's so relaxing.
What's the song?
I can't remember, but it's a gorgeous performance.
Let me love you. Let me say that I do. If you lend me your ear, I'll make it clear the way that I do. Let me whisper it. Let me sigh it. Let me sing it, my dear, or I will cry it. Let me love you. Let me show that I do. Let me do a million impossible things so you'll know that I do. I'll
dawn if you let me love you today. And tomorrow I'll send you merrily on your way.
Well, this has been pretty fabulous.
This has been so fabulous. But, you know, we have one more question for you.
Uh-oh, what?
So you're in your kitchen and you're on a one of those phones that has a really long cord.
I have one of those in my kitchen.
You do? Okay, yeah. Well, there you are. See, I knew that.
It's olive green and has a rotary. No joke. Yeah.
Well, I was looking for diamonds once, and so I got into your house to try to find some, because I'm just specifically a diamond thief.
All right.
So, so you're on that phone, and that cord goes all the way to Florida to B. Arthur's phone.
Okay.
And you get to leave her a message. What are you going to tell her?
Why is she in Florida?
Because that's heaven. That's heaven.
That's for old people heaven.
Okay, and so this message is like, if she were in heaven and could hear it, what would I want to say?
She has a voicemail, yeah.
Hi, B. It's David. I'm sorry. I know it's been 20 years since you wrote me back. I just want you to know that your influence on me has proven durable. It wasn't just a flash in a pan. And like you said to me, you know you've made a lot of people laugh, but I think you underestimate the degree to which you also gave people a lot of musical pleasure. And I think that that was more important to you than you let on. That's it.
Beautiful. So specific.
Just like B.
Mm-hmm. And economical, just like B.
And just like Lottie Lenya.
And Lottie Lenya. Oh. David, thank you for coming.
Thank you, David.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're so wonderful. And yeah, B. Arthur is so wonderful. Thanks, everyone, for listening. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram.
At Girls for the Podcast. Like, the subscribe. That drives you so crazy.
It makes me so mad.
Because you think that they're
gonna keep your dyslexia away from my self-promotion.
From my career. Your dyslexia is ruining my career.
I've been meaning to talk to you about how your dyslexia is ruining our podcasting career. We love you, Battle Angels, and we really love you, B. Arthur.
Yeah.
Thank you, B.
Keep golden. Bye, babies.
Bye.
The man in the moon is a lady. A lady with lipstick and curls. The cow that jumped over cried, "We're jumping, Jehovah." I think it's just one of the girls. She winks at the stars from her bed of green cheese. That isn't a nightgown, it's a Saturn chemise. Oh, her friends are the stars and the planets. She sends the Big Dipper a kiss. So don't ever offend her. Remember her gender.